Good morning. I'm Mitchell Krause for Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Is the Russian president ill again or just tired? The sudden scrubbing of a Kremlin meeting raises new questions. Jonathan Sanders reports from Moscow.
Boris Yeltsin added to the worrisome guessing game about his health this morning by abruptly canceling a scheduled meeting with Vice President Al Gore. The Kremlin tried to make the last-minute change sound ordinary, explaining that Yeltsin had just gone on a vacation, a two-week health cure at Borovika, the sanitarium outside Moscow, where he recovered from a heart attack last fall. A Yeltsin spokesman summarily announced the president would receive the American number two man at Borovika tomorrow. That may take the sting out of this morning's snub, but the last-minute rescheduling surprised Gore.
I learned this morning that it would be postponed until tomorrow.
Basic Kremlinology says this morning's cancellation is a sign that Yeltsin's health is quite shaky. And it shows that the Yeltsin administration takes healthy support from the Clinton government so much for granted that it's willing to snub the American vice president. Jonathan Sanders, CBS News, Moscow.
But Yeltsin is apparently continuing a post-election shakeup. The Interfax news agency says he's removed a hardliner as chief of his personal staff and replaced him with Anatoly Chubais, a liberal who was a key architect of Russia's economic reforms. British police say they've arrested several people in London and recovered a large quantity of bomb-making material. The announcement comes barely a day after the bombing of a luxury hotel in Northern Ireland in the first such attack since an IRA ceasefire 2 years ago. In London, the scene of violent protests by Catholic youths against recent Protestant marches, an all-too-familiar scene was played out again, and Tom Fenton was there.
They are burying Dermot McShane, a member of an Irish nationalist militant group who was killed in the riots of the past few days, and his death has become the focus for Irish nationalist anger in Northern Ireland. The hope now is that as they bury him, people will also bury some of their anger, and that there can be a cooling off period now in Northern Ireland. But at the moment, the mood here is as somber as the weather. It's a dark, overcast day, and in the backs of everyone's minds is the possibility that there will be more outbursts of violence, more killing.
It's almost over as a London court grants a preliminary decree of divorce to Prince Charles and Princess Diana. Adam Rayfield has the royal details.
It only took 2 minutes to bring the 15-year marriage to an end. What began in white lace and silk and the pageantry of a royal wedding in St. Paul's Cathedral finished in a formality in a London courtroom. Neither prince nor princess was present, nor their lawyers, just 30 or so reporters to hear the petition, His Royal Highness versus Her Royal Highness, read out by the clerk. The judge pronounced an interim decree. Divorce will be finalized in 6 weeks' time.
A new U.S. space record, one for longevity, is being set by American astronaut scientist Sharon Lucid, and she's facing 6 more weeks in orbit aboard the Russian space station Mir.
I just hope that it's not a record that holds for very long, because I hope in the next few years that quite a few Americans will have the opportunity to spend a long time in space.
On a scratchy radio link with Mir, Lucid also said she's looking forward to more time to experiment and will savor her reunion on Earth even more when the shuttle due to bring her back is ready for its mission later this summer. It's back to court in Denver today for attorneys in the forthcoming Oklahoma City bombing trial. Lee Frank reports.
Today's court session is for lawyers to argue about crucial evidence, much of it found after Terry Nichols turned himself in 2 days after the federal building blast. Defense lawyers contend permission to search Nichols' home was improperly obtained. Found items include a receipt for ammonium nitrate fertilizer and other possible bomb-making parts. Nichols apparently implicated his former Army buddy Timothy McVeigh, saying they were together in Oklahoma City 3 days before the blast. After the explosion, Nichols says McVeigh had him clean out a storage locker in Kansas. It's up to federal judge Richard Mace to decide if this key evidence was properly gathered and if a jury should eventually hear about it in considering charges against the accused Oklahoma City federal building bombers. Lee Frank for CBS News, Denver.
There are doubts today that a white Chevrolet found about 20 miles from the bombing site in Saudi Arabia is the getaway vehicle used by terrorists whose blast killed 19 American airmen last month. The Washington Post reports a senior Saudi law enforcement official is now concerned that the car may not be the right vehicle. FBI Director Louis Free is in Saudi Arabia for a second time to press for more access to evidence in the case. They're tallying up the cost of Hurricane Bertha, which caused widespread damage to homes and farms and a big loss in income from tourists along the North Carolina coast. Gordon Clapp is the state's travel and tourism director.
The Outer Banks, over a five-day period, probably lost about $4.5 million per day, it's estimated. The Wilmington, North Carolina area estimates about $7.5 million a day over a four-day period. So it's rather significant.
This is Barry Bagnato in New Bern, North Carolina. People will protect their homes come hell or high water. Sherry and Daniel Skakowski stood up to both during Hurricane Bertha. Their home is a sailboat.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, that big one that's over there against our seawall is actually from here.
Beside demolished docks along the Trent River here, Sherry and other boat owners marveled over the hurricane's power and her adventure, sticking it out on the boat.
It was better than seeing them beat up at the docks. The docks just got murdered.
Dozens of vessels tied there were lost or damaged. Some slammed into other boats after being whipped across the river.
It was very, very windy. We had 100-mile-an-hour gusts and went through, and we were in a roughy kind of exposed area, but there were another dozen boats around us. Nobody else manned in there but us, but everybody held. We had two anchors out and just rowed her out.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars in claims already have been made to insurers for boat losses here. Many face big recovery bills. Some are left with nothing. The Skakowskis have the story of a lifetime, and most importantly, their home.
People would say you're nuts.
I probably would agree with them. I would say so, but when you live aboard and it's all you got, you stick with the boat.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, New Bern, North Carolina.
Brown & Williamson Tobacco is in the spotlight again today. A one-time company executive, Jeffrey Wigand, is due to be questioned by his former employer in a deposition in Louisville. The company's suing Wigand for allegedly violating confidentiality agreements and stealing documents. Wigand claims Brown & Williamson's former chairman, Thomas Sandifer, lied to Congress 2 years ago when he said nicotine was not addictive. Sandifer died yesterday at the age of 56 after what the company says was a long battle with aplastic anemia.
You're connected to MSNBC.
Good morning and welcome to MSNBC. I'm Jody Applegate, and here are some of the top stories we're covering.
The sound
today.
Of a brand new cable news network, the marriage of Microsoft and NBC to form MSNBC, a 24-hour cable news operation to challenge CNN. It will expand on NBC's present news operation using established talent, including Tom Brokaw, Brian Williams, and Katie Couric. And tonight, a live interview with President Clinton. On Wall Street, the Dow is now down 22 points. It's 10 past the hour.